you looking for solid answers on why our healthcare system is so jacked up? Tired of the soft talk and ready to get real? Then turn up the volume and tune into smashithealthcare.com, where real, serious medical advisors are discussing how to save our healthcare system.
Get ready to get smashed.
Hey, Smashers, we are back for another show. This is Bob Salvat on the mic, Danny from Soho, and we have a superstar here with us today. You know, every once in a while you come across a, you know, what some might call, I don't know if you saw the latest Marvel comic movie, but an Eternal. Somebody who's a legacy either in the making or been made. And today, he's even got the name for it, folks. I'm going to introduce you to none other than Dutch Rojas. Hey, Dutch, how you doing, man? How things going?
Energy's good, brother. Thank you. So great to be here with you. I just can't get over that background. That Soho background is just the nuts. I love that thing. I'm Danny, like, can I come over right now?
Right.
Yeah, Danny from Soho, right?
Yep. And we'll have the YouTube edition of the Smash It Healthcare podcast, coming out soon. But listen, we got Dutch on the show today. Dutch is a very, very interesting guy. You know, we talk a lot about on this show about eliminating waste. We talk about streamlining efficiencies and, you know, med device and healthcare. We talk about leveraging technology to try and, you know, eliminate waste and how we can all work together to get to the greater goal, right? And I think someone who can really add a big exclamation point to that, right, is Dutch. And Dutch, you have a mission. You want to tell everybody what's your mission in life? You've kind of made it your mission, right? This is your cape. Yeah, I mean, this is your mantle.
This started in the summer of 95, and I think it's stayed pretty consistent. It's just, you know, how do you make medical treatments affordable, accessible? And then how do you make them affordable, accessible for the whole world? You know, and how do you do that in the study of it and figuring it out and then deploying those strategies? It's pretty concise, but it's pretty straightforward. And I don't know anybody that doesn't want me to do that.
Right. Right.
Maybe the carrier, maybe the American carrier.
Yeah. I was going to say there's all right with it. Yeah. There's the axis of evil in some out there who probably don't want you to do that. Right. And the guys who just like, you know, being completely, you know, disorganized and allowing, you know, money to fall through the cracks, that probably wouldn't, you know, don't necessarily care for that. But how did you get to this point? Okay. Because, you know, I know my story and I know how, you know, why I'm here and why I do this kind of thing, right? There's not a whole lot of people that'll get on a podcast, or get on a microphone and just speak the truth. Right. Because they're just afraid. They're kind of afraid what everybody else is going to, you know, think and what everybody else might say and all of that. But look, man, you know, you're bold, you know, you're kind of, you know, you're like this Hulk, man. You're a warrior, you know, and you're building a legacy for yourself in this, you know, whether you claim it or not, that's right. What it looks like. You know, you're on the stage fighting the fight. So how did you get here? What happened? Who ran over your dog when you were a kid? You know, what happened? Tell me the story.
I don't know if it's very dramatic, but certainly I've never been one to not say what's on my mind. I think it's certainly if you hang out in the Netherlands, which is where I was born and raised, Dutch people are pretty straightforward, right? Like, I don't think the difference between Americans and Dutch people is that Americans take everything offensively. Right. And Dutch people are just trying to make statements of fact. Look, it's not that you're a fat, overweight, lazy, undisciplined person. It's just that you're fat. Like, it's not, I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but you're fat. So like, just take it with a grain of salt and like make your life better and improve. It's a coach.
Right.
I like when your coach talks to you that way.
Right.
So I think that's
or a Marine Corps drill instructor. Semper Fi, devil dog.
Right. Right.
Right. So
yeah, I don't think me being a Marine, you know, that hurt the cause at all. That just emboldened me even more. I was like, wait a minute, we can do all this and I'm a little Lance Cooley. No, hold on, you know.
That's great, yeah. Man. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, culture is a big thing, right? I mean, it's funny. It's interesting that you say that because, you know, I think our culture in this world right now, at least in the U.S., is starting to change a little bit, right? Yeah. And that bold American, you know, attitude is kind of, I don't know, in some circles, it's just kind of simmering down a little bit. And, you know, you have, you know, and I don't want to get political. We don't need to get political, because the fact is we're all humans, right?
Yep.
We all bleed red. And, you know, the reality is we need to find that inner voice, and we need to, you know, really stand up for something, right? Show up, stand up for something, right? So let me ask you a question. Why healthcare? What happened that kind of steered you in the direction of healthcare and said, you know what, I really need to do this? I mean, because honestly, it could have been anything, right?
It could have. I think that when I was young, I had a feeling I was going to be a world changer. And I don't mean that in any kind of like, I think I'm better than other people, because I certainly don't. But that was my feeling. So I don't know. I was 4 or 5 years old. I had a dream that I was standing on top of a mountain and I saw just endless amounts of people. And I, you know, I heard a voice and it said, you know, one day you're going to help millions and millions of people. And so I think that kind of stuck to me throughout my life. Now, the big reason I got into healthcare, the summer of 1996, I went to Guyana on a medical mission. Oral Roberts students, that's a Protestant college in or university in Tulsa, have to go on a mission trip.
Hallelujah. So,
yeah. So my mission trip was, where do I not have to preach, and where do I not have to speak, and where can I just do? And I ended up building a surgery center, small operating rooms, and watching a bunch of doctors do work 24/7. It was a pretty amazing thing. Like, imagine seeing like 2 temporary operating rooms, a queue, which in American you call it a line.
This was in Guyana?
Yeah, Guyana, about 4 hours south of Georgetown. So like, it took a couple of days on a little boat down the river. I mean, I don't know where we were, man. I was like, you know, 17 years, 18. I guess I was just 18. And wow. I'm thinking to myself, what have we been given? And I'm not talking about it in a woke sense, but I mean, like, from a humility sense, like, you've been given a whole bunch of opportunities and maybe you ought to be responsible, right? Like, we talk about the parable of the talents a lot.
Right.
And that parable is pretty sincere. Like, hey, you have a gift. Are you using it? Are you championing it? Are you doing the right things with the gifts that God's given you? Well, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I don't know. But that's the challenge on an introspective basis. And I think seeing lines of people, and then on the same time seeing doctors and nurses weep.
Wow.
I mean, like, powerful, make you teary eyed, because it's just like, you come out of the OR at 11 o'clock at night and you're watching these people just work and work and work and work. And then the doctors and nurses come out and say things like, this is why I chose.
Wow.
This is why I decided.
Wow.
And I don't think you can undo that sincerity. You know what I mean? Wow. They didn't do it for a reimbursement from Optum and United Healthcare. They're not doing it to get some money out of Humana.
Right.
They're doing it because they want to help people. I mean, like, what drives humanity? And that drove me, man. I remember thinking, like, well, I'm an accounting student. What could I possibly do? Like, I don't want to be a doctor. I hate science. I don't like this, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, what do I do? And I think between that and my time in the Marine Corps, I mean, when you see people that don't look like you, that don't speak the same language as you at all, grew up very different culturally, and all they want to do is be good moms, good dads, feed their children and raise them. And then that's taken away from them because 2 governments are in conflict over something.
Right.
Right. Because they have no understanding. And then you see children with no arms and cleft lips and all this stuff that, like,
right,
American, like, we could totally fix all of it, but it's not. So you take all of that desperation out of these third world countries. And I think just, it was right time for me, man. And I think my mission, not to overstate it, but it was just like, I knew what I needed to do.
Right.
And then I needed to find a teacher to teach me.
Right.
Right. So after graduation, I worked for an accounting firm that lasted 9 months. I hated it. It was the worst job of all time. I was like, I can't sit at a cubicle. I mean, like, we're not made to sit at cubicles, man. I mean, like, some people have that personality. You don't. I don't. Like, I want to talk. I want to learn. I'm insanely curious. And I'm like, hey, let's get this show on the road.
Right.
So I think, like, kind of the culmination of those two things. And I was like, well, how does healthcare work? Right. And I don't, like, you could ask everybody in the United States and nobody really knows how it works.
Right.
I mean, like, I go up to Washington, D.C. pretty regularly, and I can, I mean, and I'm not saying this with any judgment or unkindness, but 99% of the policy wonks that I talk to don't have a clue.
Right.
I've yet to meet a governor, a senator, or a congressperson who had any idea. Like, I'll talk to them about Medicare for All and how insurance works and how self-funding works and how do companies get
glaze at you.
And they, like, yeah, exactly. They have no idea. So I think, like, okay, well, how do we fundamentally change that? And that's where kind of, you know, the last 18 years of my life, this is where it's been going.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I could tell you, even just doing this podcast, I've learned a lot, you know, from understanding healthcare even more. And I've been in it, you know, for the last 17 years. So it's like this tangled web that we've woven. And I say this all the time. And it's just like we're trying to figure out how to fix it. Right. And, you know, what do you do? You know, my kid comes to me all the time and, you know, he's got a shoelace and knots and I got to sit there and, you know, open this thing and work at it. And finally I break it free and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, crazy relief. But when you do that with healthcare, you find another knot and then there's another knot and then there's another knot. Yep. And it's like this endless hallway of a mirror of knots. And, you know, and you're just like, whoa, you know, how do we tackle this thing? Right. Where do I take a bite out of the elephant first? But I want to go back to Guyana just real quick for a second. Let me ask you a question. How long were you in Guyana?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. 21 days. Right.
Yep.
They say it takes 21 days to really change someone. Right. Right.
Yeah, that's true. Form of habit, 21 days.
Right. How many?
I was there a month, but I was in country for 21 days.
Right. How many people in this world, entitled people in this world, need to go do that? You know what I mean? To have a life-changing experience.
You say that 100
times. Right. To have a life-changing experience like that, you want to become a legacy. Listen, anybody out there who's listening right now, smashers, right? You're caught on the rat wheel of life, and you think that, you know, you've... You know, everything, you wake up, it's Groundhog's Day and everything is the same exact thing over and over again. Why don't you shake up your rat's nest a little bit? And why don't you go to a place like Guyana and become a future superstar, become a legacy and start finding something to fight for, go on a mission trip and go figure that out. I think that, you know, we all need to do that. We need to take a bite out of that and figure that out. You know, for me, I was, you know, traumatized by a death in my family. And so for me, that kind of brought me to where I was at. And that shocked the living heck out of me. And what it did is it set me on this path to start to think and do things a certain way. And when I see something that is not righteous, when I see some, even if it goes against the grain, all the more better. If it goes against the grain, I'm on it. Even if it goes against the grain, right? When I see something that's not righteous, that's not right, I'm all over that thing and I'm trying to figure it out and I'm trying to say, hey, where's the system? Where's the process to fix this? Right. And so I think now, you know, by listening to what you're saying, right. You know, you talk about the parable of talents, right. You talk about, you know, basically you want to give people in a nutshell what the parable of talents are. For those who don't know what the parable of talents are, in a nutshell, if you could just break it down in 30 seconds, what do you got, Dutch?
Look, God gives everybody gifts. Right. And so he's like, hey, I gave one person one gift, one person three gifts, one person five gifts. What are you going to do for him?
Right.
And I think the Almighty demands a return.
Right.
He's giving you investment. And that's the problem, right? People are like, for some reason, our society looks to, hey, I have a problem. I'm going to ask five of my best friends.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. I've never done that. I just go, okay, what am I going to do? And I look to myself. Right. And then I'm like, okay, God help me, please figure this out. Because generally I get myself into the trouble.
Right.
Right. So like, it's something that I've done to myself. And so I think the parable of the talents just says, what do you have? Be introspective, figure it out, and then go execute on what you're good at.
Right.
Don't try to be like everybody else. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing and go do your thing. Like, be authentically you and roll.
Right. There's a smasher like, right now.
I am not a one talent guy, but I'm not LeBron and I'm not like a big superstar. I'm not a five talent guy.
Right.
But I'm a three talent guy.
Right.
And I got to execute my strategy.
And you got
to
move on.
Every day I wake up and it's like, I smile and I think, well, like, what do we get to do today? How many kids are we going to help? How many parents are we going to help? Like, to help a fireman in New York? Do we get to help like a union guy in, you know, the middle of Chicago? Like, what do we get to do today?
Right. Right. Yep. So there's a smasher right now who's probably listening to you, right? Who's caught on the rat wheel of life, you know, Groundhog's Day, doing the same thing every day. And he's listening to this, or she's listening to this, and they're saying, you know, my life kind of sucks. It's an empty hole, and I'm doing the same thing every day, and it's going nowhere. And listen, all you got to do is make a choice. Make a choice, use your voice, right? Embrace your gifts and roll with it, right? And then things start happening, right? Because, you know, they just do. You're shaking things up. So let me ask you a question. How do you plan? How do you foresee this? Because, you know, I've heard you talk about being a visionary, and I love it. So if you can cast the vision for the audience a little bit and talk about how do you plan on executing, you know, the mission. Now, things may change along the way. We understand this, right? Right.
Sure.
But how, in this world, in this current, you know, economic climate, this environment, you know, things are a little crazy. Gas prices are right now are through the roof. You know, inflation is going, you know, nuts. Home prices are going up. You know, things are getting pretty wild. But how do you see this execution occurring here?
The execution on making healthcare affordable and accessible.
Yes.
So this is a really simple process. Price transparency. Look, it just forget everything you've ever learned about everything in healthcare. Like, put it all away. Stop. Like, everybody's brain immediately goes to insurance and coverage and Medicare and forget all that. Just start with a very basic tenets of just how do humans transact. Mm-hmm. Right. We transact. You go to buy a hamburger. You know that it's, well, today it's probably like $9.79. A few years ago, it was like $5.
Over in Soho, it's $14.99.
Right. In Soho, it's $14. Yeah. Felix's place, which is in Soho. Anyways. So, yeah, I think, look, it's price transparency. If you imagine every physician in the world, not just the United States, put up a price and said a new patient consult for us is $1, $3, $5, $100, whatever it might be. Now what you have is competition. And I think we typically as Americans, now that I've been in this country since 1993, I probably think a lot more like an American than I do like a Dutch guy. But I think like we forget that price transparency creates competition, and competition is the number one thing that cuts out profits. So we hear a lot about those people are making a lot of money and those people are doing a lot of things. And the only way they're doing that is by cheating. So perfect competition eliminates profit. And so what I want is if you want profit out of the system, which I think red and blue people agree with, we want all the profit out of the system, well then create competition. The BUCAs, Blue Cross, United, Cigna, and Aetna don't allow for any competition. In fact, we had a case this week and I did my first video. Thank you for reminding me yesterday. I haven't done a video in a year and I did it yesterday because I was so upset about it. We have a patient in the Intermountain Health System in Salt Lake, Utah, right? Nice little Mormon family. Well, their daughter needs a spine procedure. If they leave the Salt Lake City region under their health plan and they go to Phoenix, which is really easy to go to, or they go to Denver where there's some top rated spine surgeons, they now have to pay a 50% co-insurance bill. Well, what's the problem with that? I mean, it's still like, let's call it a $110,000 procedure, whether it's in Phoenix, Denver, or in Salt Lake. But the fact of the matter is this corporate entity because they don't want to compete with anybody, because they want to be monopoly-ish, they don't allow competition. And they go, oh, you want to get your kid healed? You want a great doctor to work with your kid? Well, that's all cool, but you'll have a 50% coinsurance. And for those who don't know what coinsurance is your obligation out of the total bill. So if the bill is 100K, you, because you left Salt Lake, have to come up with 50 grand. First, we were going to cover it, but now you got to pay 50 grand. Wow. Only because you went 1,000 miles south. Like, that doesn't make sense. And so that's the kind of stuff that you go, price transparency solves these problems. And then the other thing about price transparency solving the problems is that really does trickle down to the whole world. I mean, you think about what a computer costs in 1955. There's a mainframe, right? Everybody knows it was the size of a general office building floor. That's how big a computer was that we now have in our hands.
Right.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, Android phones are sold all around the world. So are Apple phones. So are all mobile phones. It's allowed a lot of third world countries to jump technology. I mean, you guys know all this stuff.
Right.
So I just want healthcare to be like everybody else.
Right. Right.
And that's not what it is. And so my plan is very simply, we've executed it flawlessly on the employer side, is we started working with American employers. And American employers are labor funds, Taft-Hartley labor funds, and private corporations who all are responsible for paying their own bill. They don't use insurance. And that, for your audience's sake, is about 70% of every single employer in the country that has more than 100 employees. Employees generally think, because I have an insurance card that says United, Cigna, Aetna, or Blue Cross, that they aren't paying the bill. But I promise you, their company pays 100% of every single claim.
Wow.
And so it's like, well, if you had price competition, now all of a sudden the prices would go down. They have to, right?
Because right.
Every single person in every organization would say, well, hey, spine doctor, why are you better than Johnny down the street?
Right.
I mean, you charge $50,000 and he charges $45,000. Why? And then they'd start asking questions and things would become shoppable. And it is only through shoppability that we can execute. So we have a three-pronged strategy. We kind of have a three-pronged strategy. I have the enterprise strategy, I have the direct-to-patient strategy, also known as direct-to-consumer. I just like to be funny and call it direct-to-patient. And then we have an exchange model, which are futures and options, and we can talk about that, you know, like five podcasts from now. But look, it's really a basic premise, right?
Right. I love it. But let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask a question on behalf of our listeners, right? A lot of our listeners are, you know, medical device manufacturers, suppliers, you know, industry professionals in that area. And I think you said something that was really interesting. And, you know, okay, so step one, price transparency. Step two, competition, right? Competition, right, now leads to eliminating profit. Correct. Yes. All right. So talk to me about eliminating profit. How does the elimination of profit get you to where you want to be?
Well, let's dive into that. So it eliminates waste and it eliminates margins and it does something that every single manufacturer understands. It moves. What we do is we have mean reversion or reversion to the mean. In other words, we were making big margins on a product. And as more manufacturers got into the product, our margins got smaller.
Right.
And what happens is what the opportunity is that when we create great innovation, we get to start all over in the process. Like we get to win market share again and we get to do better.
Right.
So yes, we erode profit, but patients and our customers get a higher quality product at a lower price. And that's the way the process works.
So if I understand you correctly, profit naturally erodes anyway. But what happens here is that by way of competition, you're actually eliminating some of these outliers, some of these, you know, these suppliers or whoever that are, you know, getting these, you know, outrageous numbers, these gross margins. You're eliminating that because you're coming to an average mean, you know, price, if you will, but you're not eliminating profit. There's an acceptable mean of profit.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. So it's not necessarily eliminating profit. It's it's diminishing profit of a natural erosion that occurs. And what you're doing is you're making that course more natural, right?
So if I was a med manufacturer, I would love it. Because right. Now what I'm doing is now I'm beating the daylights out of the guys that are terrible.
Right.
And I'm winning more market share.
Exactly.
If I was a really great surgeon, like we have about 4,800 participating surgeons, not doctors, surgeons, right? The reason they love competition, because doctors are intrinsically competitive.
Sure.
Is because they don't want to just win the St. Louis market business. They want to win all of it.
Right.
They want to cut on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just make a point. They want to cut on people that are appropriate. It's clinically appropriate. I don't really mean
that
everyone.
Need surgery. People that need surgery.
Right.
People that
need surgery. Right. but you get the point. Like that means the best doctors make the most money. The right. best med device people get to make the most money.
Right.
And they don't get to make it through lobbying.
Mm-hmm.
Through like, oh, well,
cutting corners.
Cutting corners. We have a better PE firm that knows more senators and congressmen.
Sure.
I mean, like that doesn't do anything for anybody.
Right. Right.
Like I have a vision for the United States being the greatest provider of healthcare in the world. So if you look at all these single payer countries that all these people think is so great, well, they're horse crap. And the United States could, through competition, attract all of those people from Europe, all the people from China, and all the people from the Middle East. And they would all come to the United States for surgery if we were competitive and we produced our outcomes. Now,
right.
Look, I'm just talking about an $8 trillion business spend per year. I'm not talking about a market cap.
Right.
So we could have $8 trillion of medical business that can travel, right, to come to the United States.
Sure.
And I don't understand why, and I stopped caring about 5 years ago, why med device companies don't like that, and why governments don't like it, and why Americans like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, United, Cigna, and Aetna don't like it. They're like, no, I'm happy just providing my little service to the St. Louis market.
It's it's the parable of the Kodak.
Yeah, tell me about that.
The parable of the Kodak, right? The parable of the Kodak. It's a joke. Kodak, yes. Their margins were too high, right?
Too
so
high.
They actually invented the digital camera, right? They never
right.
they sat on it. They didn't do anything with it. Their margins were so high in film that they stuck to film. They actually changed their consumer base to focus and shift towards, you know, photographers and all of that after they, you know, the general public was starting to shift more towards digital camera. And they, by way of their negligence, not only did they go bankrupt, but a little company like Microsoft and Apple got into digital filmmaking and you know, on screen, you know, digital imagery. So, you know, that's what happened. And that's what I think is happening in healthcare. I think what we're seeing now is we're seeing a paradigm shift occurring. And so there's going to be more and more people like yourself that are going to start coming out of the woodwork, right, waving a banner and saying, "Hey, look, this crap's got to stop, and you've got to really start to compete fairly." And now we see, because of the way, you know, technology is working, now we see those outliers.
Yep,
they're
yep.
transparent. They're visible. Before they weren't yep. as visible. So you can't hide in the margins anymore. And this is not just suppliers, okay? Because this is hospitals too. And not only is it just hospitals, but it's on a federal level too. When you talk about CMS and Medicare, Medicaid, and the way that they're doing that, right? Right?
Look, the Medicare reimburses independent physicians 40 to 60% less. So if I work at General Hospital A in a big city, like we'll pick on a wonderful, no, I won't say the name, system in Orlando. In Orlando, the hospital gets $100 for a treatment, and an independent doctor who does it in office where there are no site of service infections, there are no fall rates, there's no readmissions, gets $20. How much sense does that make?
None.
So they're paying the hospital way more money, bankrupting the doctor's practice, when the doctor's like, "Hey, I just want to do my thing in a really safe place." And then now, but imagine that's all across the country.
Right.
where basically the federal government is taking business from independent doctors. There's only 35% independent doctors left.
Right.
And they're handing it to BlackRock, Blackstone, all the big PE companies, and all the big healthcare companies. Oh, by the way, all the healthcare companies are not for profit. I mean, like, it's a racket.
It is a racket. And now they're trying to propose a system that's going to fix that. And we talk about it in one of our podcasts. And it's ridiculous. I mean, they want to come up with, you know, 30, 40, 50 parameters on where these physicians have to, you know, meet the mark. And if they don't meet the mark, then they don't get the money that they're looking to get. And it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. Again, back into the tangled web that we weave. Right.
Yep.
And we weave this thing in a way that, you know, nobody's going to undo the knot. And if they do, there's a knot right behind it. And there's a knot right behind that. And so what I think is we just need to get out of this hall of mirrors of all these crazy knots. And we need to start looking elsewhere. And we need to start creating a new platform, a new way, a new getting on the visions and the missions of the Dutch Rojas's of the world. And we got to start thinking that way, because you're right. The U.S. has the ability to have the best healthcare system overall. We have the strength. We have the tools. We have the players. We just need to all get on the same page and agree and surrender to the fact that, you know, this plan of price transparency, this plan of competition, and this plan of diminishing or profit or naturalizing the profit stream is the way to go. And I can't agree with you more.
Like, you think about it, like, of course I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps, but like, you start thinking about it from a national scale. Like, if you implemented this as a government, right, which we tried to do, we tried to have a price transparency law. It didn't go very far. But if we could do it and we did it right, we were executing
hand in hand with the med device tax, right?
Right. Yeah. I love that tax. Sorry, that's sarcasm. if we were able to, like, how does this delve into foreign policy? If all of a sudden all the nations of the world need our healthcare, what does it do? And I'm like, look, this has implications, rewards, and consequences that most of these policy people have never considered. It's why, like, I get invited every once in a while to talk to these wonderful Congress people and senators, U.S. Congress people and senators. And I don't even know what to say to them because they can't follow the first five things. Like, the three of us on this podcast know, like, in our, like, we'll forget more than these people will learn. And that's unfortunate. I'm like, where are the people that are really going to dedicate their lives to learning this stuff? Like, right. How did you learn it? How did I learn it? People are like, did you go to school? And I'm like, no. How'd you learn it? Well, I spent the last 20 years figuring it out, man. I just tinkered and pilfered and essentially sat in my garage and like, well, this doesn't work. How about this? Well, that doesn't work. How about this? Do that for 20 years and you'll start getting an idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was on a flight once. Where was I? I was heading out to, I think, California. Yeah. I was heading out to California and I got my seat was right next to Orrin Hatch. And I had Orrin Hatch in a Mormon Bible for about 4 hours. Right. And no, it was probably closer to an hour. I think it was 2 hours. It was a layover. And then we jumped on the plane. It was about 2.5 hours. It was about 2.5, 3 hours. Orrin Hatch and I sitting right next to each other. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, you know, and it was back then I was launching, you know, I came up with an inventory management system. It was the first med device inventory management tracking system. And so I talked to him about it and I said, you know, this would eliminate waste. And this was around, you know, they were starting to kick off the med device tax and really talk about some of these things. And I said, look, this would just eliminate so much waste and lost and misplaced goods and this and that, and the other. And he just, that's really interesting, you know. Yeah. And look, I mean, he, I don't know. They got people. Their people got people, and those are the people that you need to talk to if you want, you know, them to say yes or something, because they got so much going around them, you know. In their defense, it's just it's absolutely crazy and overwhelming.
This is why I think people like you and I have to just do it ourselves,
right?
And then eventually, like, people go, oh, and then more companies start popping up that are doing what you're doing. And you're like, on one hand, you're kind of upset about it. I mean, like, every once in a while, a new one pops up for us. And I'm like, man. And then I'm kind of happy because I'm like, well, we're less than 1% of total utilization in the United States. The Bukas, Blue Cross United Cigna, own 99%. Well, gosh, if we had 1,000 competitors, it'd be great because then they wouldn't have any business. And then I could just fight with these guys and that would be awesome because I'd like to fight with them. Right. I don't really like fighting with United Healthcare.
Right.
It's not fun. So, yeah, no, I'm totally in. I think we have to do it ourselves. And that's,
right.
You know, that's what you're doing. That's what I'm doing. And that's what's going to make it work.
Right. So what I want to do is I want to continue this conversation in another podcast. And I want to talk a little bit more. You don't have to give us the cookie recipe, but I want to talk a little bit more about the details. I want to also, if we could pick on, you know, maybe something that's out there that we find, you know, that's another topic, that's an interesting topic that we can shift off of and kind of use it as a use case scenario so that we can get our smashers to dial in a little bit more. Because here's the deal. If we all don't fully understand what the heck is going on, we're not going to fix the problem, right? I mean, that's step number one. Number one is acknowledging there's a problem, right? And you're not going to be able to address it if you don't acknowledge there's a problem. I think a lot of people out there say, oh, yeah, there's a problem with healthcare. But it's such a freaking big elephant. They're like, I don't know where to start with that. I don't even know how that works.
I agree with you because I think, look, I could talk about certificate of need laws till I'm blue in the face and probably have for the last 15 years. And that's something that, like, I literally ask every audience I speak to, like, do you understand that when I want to build a new radiology center that does CTs and mammograms and or if I want to build a new surgery center, I'm a doctor and I want to build an OR, that I have to ask permission from the hospitals around me. Like, imagine, like, and people in the audience, I go, like, who knew that we had that law?
Yeah.
And like one person will raise their hand. And I'm like, well, now you know why healthcare is expensive. By the way, that's one of 9 laws that we talk about. So I'm like, breaking it down for people is really important.
Right.
And don't go too fast. You got to go like
really
slow.
Right.
So people can like digest it, think about it, and then go. And you can tell when people get it because they get this smile on their face and they're like, oh, you right. gotta be kidding me. And then they get upset. They're like, oh, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we talk about it often. You know, we try to pick it up and where we can, and we, you know, see things from Dr. Marty Makary, and, you know, we talk about Dan Crenshaw and some of the things that he says. And, you know, so look, this is a real issue, right? So listen, I'm going to wrap it up here, but listen, I want to say thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. And, you know, obviously, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to bring it up again. And I also want to thank all the smashers out there, right? For those of you who are new listeners, you don't know what SMASH stands for. It's Serious Medical Advisors About Saving Healthcare. And that's what we're about, right? But we don't want to get into these boring conversations, right? Because, you know, you get into these boring conversations at healthcare and I might just lose you along the road, you know, and you might fall off the curb on I-95 and crash. And that's not what we want, right? We don't want you falling asleep on this. We need you awake. We need you alert. We need some soldiers that are going to step into the ranks, right? Get into the trenches and they're going to help with the mission. Right. So if you're caught in the rat race and you're not doing something about this, listen, go to Guyana, go somewhere, go on a mission, figure it out, take a hiatus off of work. Right. People are getting paid right now not to work anyway. Right. Go out there and figure this out and figure out what your life's mission could be so that you can also, right, help out with the cause. And that's number one. We need price transparency. Number two, we need to create more competition. And number three, we need to start looking at profit and saying, hey, what's fair? What's not fair? And we have to point out those outliers and say, look, that needs to be wrangled back in. So Smashers, again, listen, like, subscribe. You know, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple, we're on iTunes. And listen, guys, we are just here to encourage you to think differently. And that's it. And we're out. If you like today's show, then join the mission. Become a fellow smasher. We're passionate about saving healthcare. Subscribe, like, share, tell your friends. Together, we can make a difference. Go to smashithealthcare.com. This show was brought to you and sponsored by Omedza.com.